Hello to everyone out there listening, and welcome to the first season of our brand new Create podcast. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be exploring the world of the creative industries, the fastest growing industry in the UK today. We're going to be chatting to people within the industry, routes they took to where they are today, and how our education system can keep up with this rapidly growing market. Over the course of the next few weeks, we're going to be speaking with people worldwide and try to see what other countries are doing to achieve the same goal. But before we begin, we would like to pay a special thanks to our sponsors, Firstport, for making all of this possible. We look forward to working together over the coming weeks ahead. Welcome to the Create Podcast. Hello to all of our listeners, and welcome back to the Create Podcast. We have been on some journey these last few weeks, and we want to say a massive thank you to everyone who has shared an episode on their social media or has gotten in touch to let us know their thoughts. It's been really, really brilliant hearing from you all. But if you're only joining us today for the first time, you can subscribe to Brawl Talent on any of the podcasting platforms as we release a new episode each Thursday between now and Christmas. You can also check out some of our previous episodes, our pilot episode, which discusses who Brawl Talent are and the typical work that we do in a normal year. You can check out episode 1, which is a chat with local Glasgow film director Doug King on the release of a short movie, Do No Harm. And last week in episode 2, we spoke with Belle and Sebastian singer-songwriter Stuart Murdoch. Today, we've got another treat for you all as we welcome award-winning country singer Nathan Carter to the show. They will storm us in the morning when the sunlight turns to sky. Death is waiting for its dance now. Is it a sentence that's to die? Today's guest is the star of country music, Nathan Carter. Nathan very generously joined the Create Podcast to chat about his album launch today, entitled The Best of the First 10 Years. We also chatted about the highs and lows of his stellar career to date, what steps the young boy from Liverpool made to becoming one of the biggest names in country music, and any advice he has for young aspiring singers to follow in his footsteps. We welcome Nathan Carter to the Create Podcast. Nathan Carter, thank you very much for taking out the time to chat with us. It's a pleasure to have you on the Create Podcast.
No problem at all. Delighted to be chatting to anyone these days. So
I know the feeling. Speaking of which, how's the last few months been for you? Have you been doing much to stay busy, or apart from obviously the housework that you were talking about there?
Yeah, I've been doing a big extension of the house. It's actually, well, it was an idea that I had at the start of the year that I would try and build a recording studio come rehearsal room come pub. So
that's literally the dream, Nathan. I think
man cave, basically a man cave. That's exactly what it is. But when I bought this house in December of last year, and the house is lovely and there's loads of space, but I thought, you know, I need a separate building where I can make as much noise as possible and no one's going to bother me.
But you know, you're speaking my language now, because we've been talking about the exact same thing for months. I think being locked up at our own homes has shown us just how noisy we can be and how noisy you want to be when you're rehearsing. And, you know, so it sounds great. Where are you joining us from? Obviously from your home, is it?
My house in I'm about 10 miles outside Enniskillen County Fermanagh.
Very nice.
North. As I say, moved in last year, but this was kind of something that I've been thinking about since I moved in. But obviously, having not been touring at all for the last 9 months, it's given me a lot of time. So I put planning in, and I started building about 3 months ago, and I didn't have planning back. And thank God, last week I got an email to say the planning was approved, because I'd basically built it at the stage.
we've all been there. And so 9 months without touring must be some shock for you, because I remember our paths crossed last year in Chicago, and you were telling me then, you were talking about your previous year's schedule and the time off you had that year, which, if memory serves me correctly, you told me about the days off in terms of days rather than weeks. So you've clearly got a pretty ruthless schedule, have you?
Yeah, I mean, the last 10 years since I started the band. And then at the start, we did like a lot of dance halls and bars and clubs and stuff. And then yeah. it got to doing theatres and small theatres, and then, you know, opera houses and concert halls. And then was lucky enough in the last few years to been able to play the likes of the Three Arena and stuff and the SSE in Belfast, which was incredible. I never sort of
can't imagine
that would ever really happen. Yeah. Schedule has always been, you know, 120 to 150 gigs a year. At the start, it was a lot more, you know, but
oh my god. And is that the way you is that the way you like it? Is it, obviously, you know, you're just in your element when you're gigging.
It used to be until the last couple of years, and I kind of slowed it down last year. We did about 100 gigs, and but you know, still, as you know as well, it's 100 gigs, but then there's album launches and press and other stuff, music videos to record in the meantime.
Yeah.
So there was.
But I love how you say. Oh, sorry, Nathan, go on.
No, I was just saying it's not just the gigs, all the that goes with it, you know, unfortunately. So
yeah, of course, I know. But I love how you say that you've cut it down to 100 gigs a year, because I mean, that's for most people, that's still a pretty manic schedule. But this episode, which is going to be released on Thursday 12th, is a pretty appropriate timing, because it's going to be the same date that your next album is going to be released. So anyone who's listened to this podcast can get their hands on your album, The Best of the First 10 Years. So, yeah, I mean, was that something that was in the pipeline for a while? Did you want to wrap up the decade with an album, or was this just something that, because you haven't been able to gig, that you just thought of throwing something out there?
Yeah, well, I've been working with a company called Sharp Music record label the last few years, and they'd said to me, would you not consider doing something to mark your 10 years on the recording for 10 years? And I said, well, yeah, I says, I don't mind putting out an album. I says, but I don't want to put it out of all back catalogue stuff. I'd rather be able to put some new material on there. So I wrote three new songs, co-wrote them, and found another old Dr. Hook song. I think it's Dr. Hook, the band. And recorded that. And so there's four brand new tracks, which people won't have heard before. And the rest is a track from every year of the last 10 years and a couple of extras. There's actually 20 tracks on the album. It should have been a double album, but it's not. It's just a single. But there's loads of stuff on it. And as you say, released on the 12th of November. Yeah, so delighted. It was great to be working on something because, as we know, anybody in the music business, we've done absolutely nothing gigging-wise for the last 9 months already. So, or 8 months. So it's great to be putting out a product and be able to do interviews and talk about music again.
Yeah, and just forward think again, yeah. and was it difficult? I mean, 20 is obviously still a lot to throw into an album, but was it difficult narrowing it down to 20 over the last decade? You've done countless number of songs and hits that you've had. What was that process like?
It was, it was hard to pick, to be honest. I mean, I've recorded an album every year, which is pretty unusual. Guys in Celtic have been used to doing albums every year. But so I had like, what is the generally 12, 14 tracks on an album. There was about 140 songs recorded.
But at least with us in Celtic Thunder, we're split between five or six guys. Like, so, you know, at least it's shared, you know, to do all of that by yourself and then to be on the road promoting it, gigging. I mean, it's unbelievable how much you've taken on the last 10 years. And it must be some feeling of achievement looking back at this stage now with the decade that you've had.
And to be honest, as you said before, I don't really know how I fitted it all in, you know, time-wise. I just really have a life outside of gigging, traveling, airports, recording, promoting. But I loved it, you know. I literally wouldn't change it for anything, you know. I enjoyed everything I've done so far, and music has been and is my whole life, really. You know, everything revolves around music. So I'm very privileged that I've been able to do the things and see the things I've seen so far on this musical
journey, and long may it continue. Absolutely. And one thing before we sort of go back in time a little bit, one of the questions that I asked Stuart Murdoch last week which I'm always fascinated to hear other artists' answer to this, that from my perspective, working with some people, that some musicians absolutely love being in a studio and they feel like that's where all the magic happens, and then the tour afterwards is like it's like a lap of honor to take that magic on the road, while other people just can't wait to have an audience in front of them, and that's when the whole thing comes alive. Do you feel with either of those that one is your natural home?
The live gig, that's kind of got involved with music for. I do a bit of songwriting, but I wouldn't call myself a songwriter, if that makes any sense. Mm. I feel more at home entertaining and being on a stage in front of a crowd and playing music live. That's where I get my buzz and the drug, as they say. So that's really what, and I do miss that now. It's been from going doing so many gigs to then this year literally doing nothing. It's been a pretty tough come down, it's been difficult to, lucky enough I have had the building project here at the house, because if I didn't I would have just gone mental.
It's definitely something I've thought more about in recent months, actually. If you look at some people who work in companies and in the corporate world, I think mental health is becoming a really important part of that, and companies seem to be spending a lot of time and actively promoting both physical and mental well-being, which is great. But sometimes I think in the music line, people are essentially self-employed, so they're throwing themselves out there and trying to take on as much work whilst the offers are still there. So looking after yourself can very easily get brushed under the carpet a bit, and you just bury yourself in work and never really allow yourself to sit back and look after yourself. And possibly the last few months has highlighted that for some people as well. But on a typical year outside of lockdown, is that a side of things that you would take quite seriously, and would you actively try to stay both physically and mentally fit?
As you say, this year I kind of realized it a lot more than ever before. Normally I'm so busy I don't have time to be thinking about stuff or get depressed or get down. Of course I get down and depressed, and you would never have enough time in the day to be sitting there with thinking about things, whereas the last year I have just had so much time. So I've made a conscious effort this year to do a lot more exercise, and I'd go to the gym 3 if not 4 days a week and do an hour every day, if I can, and do classes or do weight training. You wouldn't tell by looking at me, but I do.
You're in much better shape than I am, so I could definitely be learning a thing or two from this.
But that's definitely helped, to be honest. You come out of a class and then you just feel instantly like, oh, I've done something, I've achieved something today, and I feel physically better, and I feel mentally, which is more important mentally for me than physically, but just to feel like something. But that's been a big help, definitely. And I when I was on tour, I never really would have done,
of course, yeah,
you know, the gym has definitely been a big help. And I know for any of my friends as well, like I train with a couple of friends as well, and they all feel instantly better whenever they've done a bit of exercise and stuff.
I'd be the same. I mean, I could bury myself in the work, and then I realize that the day's gone by, but the second you do some sort of workout, you just feel a million times better. But Nathan, what I'd like to do with this podcast, what we're trying to do a little bit is, because Broad Talent, the social enterprise that I work with, is about sort of running creative projects within the communities, and a lot of the work we do is in schools and community centers, and what we're trying to do is show people who from the outside looking in are really successful in the career that they do within creativity, but also to look at the steps that were taken from an early age to get to where they are today. So, I mean, going back to the start for you growing up in Liverpool, but when you look back at your early years, is there anything that sort of jumps out as, was it a really happy time for you? Was it a city that you loved growing up in, or, what was it like for you in Liverpool growing up?
Liverpool is a great city, and I'm very kind of honoured and proud to be from it. And obviously my mum's side of the family are originally from Ireland, and that's where the love for Irish music comes in. And I was sent to our local Irish centre as a kid to get involved in cultus and traditional Irish music. And I played the accordion since I was like 5.
Oh, really?
And learned was involved in a ceilidh band from when I was about 8, playing piano accompaniments. And then I eventually started playing the piano box in the Kaylee band. But that getting involved with that at such a young age was, I think, kind of critical and key for me in wanting to be a musician full time, because I didn't really enjoy the lessons that they were, and I don't think any really, you know, having to sit learn and, you know. But then it had come to a Friday night once a month, and we would have a Kaylee or a big trad session.
Okay.
And me, that was a chance to play the new tunes I'd learned with younger people my age. You know, I might have only been 9 or 10 and then into my teenage years, but and there was always great fun. There'd be Kaylee dancing, and for me, looking back now, that was some of the best times growing up, was being involved in traditional Irish music. And I'm still friends with a lot of the people now that I met when I was a kid, and of course the music then took us to going to compete at Flaz, and every summer I would go to the All-Ireland, and for anyone that's not familiar with the All-Ireland Flaz, it can be in a different county each year, or generally it'll be in the same place for 2 years and then they'll move on. So it could be in Cavan for 2 years, then you could be down in Wexford, in Enniscorthy, be in Galway, or it could be anywhere. So
Mullingar this year, wasn't it? Or it might be in Mullingar, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, and they've just, like, next year is going to happen either, unfortunately. But
it didn't hear that.
But growing up, some of the best childhood memories I ever had was being involved in that circle of music and traveling and meeting new people, and just surprising. And it's the one thing that's made me love playing an instrument, was getting the chance to see new places, meet new people, and being a part of something.
It's very social scene, isn't it, the whole thing?
And it allowed me to socially become, to be able to talk to people and to be able to interact with people at a very young age. And yeah, you develop a personality that, you know, you have to be able to talk and to meet new people. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it was so key to becoming a more confident person in the music business.
Absolutely. And because that's one thing that I was interested to talk to you about as well, in terms of how big the Irish scene was for you growing up, because I know obviously everyone will know the connections that Liverpool has with Ireland, and even here now living in Glasgow as well. It's amazing how, although growing up I would have always known how big the Irish community was in both Glasgow and Liverpool in particular, but until you live in the cities, you don't really realize just how important it is for so many people, you know, that those centers that keeps that heritage and culture and everything alive. And and then from a performance side of things, the amounts of performance skills you learn from just throwing yourself into that and doing it from a young age, which is brilliant. When you went to school then, were you one of these kids when you're in secondary school that would set up bands or get involved in music shows, or you know, what was there anything within the school that you took part in, or was music something you did outside of school and kept it quiet inside?
No, music really was my whole life. When I look back, I joined the school choir whenever I started secondary school, and it was a very successful choir. Really, we went and sang in the White House. We went and sang for Pope John Paul in the Vatican.
Wow.
John Paul II, and we toured all the cathedrals around the UK. So I was involved with that from when I was 13 to, or maybe, sorry, 11 till I was about 15. So I was doing that in half-term breaks, summer holidays. At Christmas, we would go and do carol concerts in all the cathedrals. And then at summertime, I was doing my trad music. I was going to the FLA. I was playing in a kick. So literally when I wasn't studying, you know, for GCSEs as we did in secondary school, I was playing music, whether it be in a choir or playing trad music or learning to, I did my grades in my piano up until grade 5 and done my theory, and I was doing that outside school as well. So my whole life, I didn't do any, I'm useless at football, I'm useless at terrible at golf. I'm terrible at all that stuff. But I'm actually not that great at music, but I'm a good bluffer.
Well, you're doing a pretty convincing job.
All my life in music. So,
and was there any of your teachers that you remember? Like, I mean, were your teachers really encouraging for you to continue the music?
I had so many teachers through the years, from accordion teachers to piano teachers to vocal coaches to our choir master to our music teacher who taught me, you know, music at GCSE level. There were so many, but not really one in particular, but I mean, I was very lucky that the people around me at that time encouraged me. And that is key as well. No matter how much you want to do it, you definitely need help along the way as well. Yeah. And you need guidance. Yeah. You need someone with experience to guide you on the right path. And I was so lucky that I had that. Yeah. I would definitely push anybody that's, if they're thinking of getting into music, it's such a great avenue to go down. Maybe not even as a career, just to have it as a social aspect that you could go out and you know, you meet so many people through music. So, I mean, literally all my friends are generally, I've met them through music. So it's such a good thing to get involved with. And I would definitely push any children or teenagers, and it's never too late to learn either. You know, you can always instrument at 21 or 51. It doesn't matter, you know. It'll open up a few doors and a few avenues to meet new people and stuff. So I would push anybody to get involved in music.
I couldn't agree with you anymore. And what I love what you're saying, what Stuart Murdoch said last week as well, and I certainly echo it from my experience growing up, is that, you know, that the lessons always seemed like a bit of a chore growing up. I think some people think that because they're not loving sitting down to learn the process, that they should give it up. The amount of people now that I know that either regretted giving up piano from a young age and wish they stuck at it, or else, you know, people like, as you're saying now, that did stick with it and are just now so grateful that they can go in and pick up that instrument and play it.
I mean, when I back, my mum and dad must have driven them crazy, because I was doing, like, as I say, piano lessons, accordion lessons, vocal lessons, and every week, you know, and they'd be dropping me off, picking me up. There was just looking after, you know? So I'm so grateful for it now. I didn't realize it. You don't realize it at the time, but it's all help for the future, you know, and you have to put it. You really have to put in the hard work at a young age, or whenever you start, to be honest. But if you're determined enough to work at it, you'll get to where you want to be, and the outcome will be good, you know. But it's like anything, isn't it? It's not just music, it's sports.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever you want to do in later life, if you put enough hard work in, it'll pay off, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing that I want to ask you there, when you're talking about vocal lessons, a lot of people talk to me and ask me questions about that. Would you have taken vocal lessons in a certain genre? Was it like, did you take traditional singing approach towards lessons, or was it a classical approach in your vocal lessons? Or
it was classical, really. Did my grades, all my grades in singing, and being in a choir, we got taught vocal warm-ups and how to project and how to sing from the diaphragm and all that kind of stuff. So, which, to be honest, thank God, has helped me. I mean, the stuff I sing now is not choral at all. You know, it's all folk, country and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't matter. It's still the way you control your singing from the diaphragm and not trying to sing through the throat all the time. So it's been... knowing how to use your instruments, I guess, is key.
Yeah, exactly. And
it doesn't really matter what you're in. If you can, I know a lot of singers that sing, you know, rock and pop, and they struggle with their throat all the time. Mm. Touch wood, thank God, I haven't had any trouble so far, you know. So, but I think that's probably down to the training, just because it really helps. What genre?
Yeah, it's amazing. And then, so was there anyone that you were looking at that from a young age, thinking that's the career I want, or was there anyone you were trying to emulate in the steps that you were taking when you left school? You know, for example, were you always sure when you were leaving school that I want to now go into music? This is the path that I want to take, or was it something that you just kept tipping away with the gig?
I always knew it was going to be had to be involved in music some way.
Okay.
My dad's a joiner, and I worked with him for a year, and I was terrible. I was so bad.
That gave you a good taster.
And I got serious abuse on the building sites. getting sent for a glass hammer and a long wait and all that. It was just typical builders. But, it was good, and I learned a little bit, but yeah, no, I generally knew I wanted to be involved in singing. At the start, when I was involved with the choir, I didn't know was I going to end up going into musicals or going trying to be the next Alfie Bo or something. I didn't, you know, because I was I was learning to sing with a vibrato and all that stuff and sing classical stuff. But I didn't. I started gigging in pubs then and clubs, and they were looking for all the Irish songs and some country songs and stuff. And I ended up getting a decent wage every week from doing gigs. So I was just like, do you know what? I'm going to stick at this. And that's when I was about 17, 18. And then I got a chance to move to Ireland and start up a band and start doing the dance hall circuits around Ireland. And I jumped at that and I was only 19 then. So moved to Ireland permanently. I would have been here every summer holidays and Easter holidays and family and stuff. But I moved permanently then when I was 19. Which was a big move from Liverpool and left all my, cancelled all the pubs I'd started playing in to go and start this band and try the dance hall circuit. So we did it, and the first few years were pretty crap, to be honest. They were, you know, we packed up some nights because there wasn't enough people in, and we just had to take the gear down and load the van and don't tell anyone lads about tonight. We'll just say, hey,
we've all been but there.
It got better, you know, and released a few songs that got a bit of track, you know, got onto the Late Show and stuff, and that kind of opened up a lot of doors.
Yeah,
and then released the song Wagon Wheel, and that kind of really exploded for me. And
I was going to ask about that, because I mean, the first time that I heard the name Nathan Carter was through Wagon Wheel. You know, that seemed like a really big hit, and I was wondering, was there anything before that? Was I kind of late to the game hearing about you, or was that the song that elevated you to the mainstream level?
Well, it was I'd released a lot of stuff before, which had got me known amongst the country music fans in Ireland, you know, and the country radio had been playing me for probably 4 or 5 years, but that was the song that kind of got me onto national TV and national radio play. And that song ended up getting played at weddings and christenings and you name it, parties. It was getting played at Hoppers one night in Dublin, and they played it 3 times in the space of a night. And I was like sitting at the bar going, oh, geez, not again.
Do they know you were there, or was that just coincidence?
I was there, no.
Oh, that's even a bigger compliment then. That's brilliant.
If they had, probably would have got dragged up to sing along with on the mic, you know.
No, they brilliant. Didn't.
It was just one of them songs that clicked with younger people and older people, and it just literally got opened up so many doors for me outside of the country music fans, which had all probably heard of me before, you know, and would have been coming to shows anyway. It brought a whole new audience to the table, which was great.
Headed down south to the land of the pines, thumbing my way into North Carolina, staring up the road, pray to God I see headlights. I made it down the coast in 17 hours, picking me a bouquet of dogwood flowers, and I'm hoping for rally so I can see my baby tonight. So rock me, mama, like a wagon wheel. Rock me, mama, any way you feel. Hey, hey.
So what happens then, Nathan? What, like, I mean, when you release an album and you know, that does that well, gets to number one, when you have Wagon Wheel that's being played in Coppers 3 times a night, do you feel nerves or now a sense of expectation to deliver another Wagon Wheel? Or did you feel like, okay, now this is the level of...
I was so, so glad that I'd worked so hard for years to try and get a bit of a name out there and build up a bit.
Yeah,
momentum and a fan base, but for me it was a lot more about, geez, this is really tough now. I'm going to have to come up with, you know, because naturally in business, no matter what business you're in, you've got to be seen to be going up. So I was like, yeah, we go up from here. And for me, yeah, it was actually wasn't about the recording anymore. It was about the live gigs. The live gigs just seemed to develop momentum because it was going from playing maybe a 600 seater to then going to a 1,000 seater. And I remember playing, we did two nights in Dublin in the MCD venue. Now I've forgotten the name of it.
The Olympia.
Exactly, the one. So we did two nights there and they sold out, which was a huge thing for me. Cause like generally the Olympia is known for, you know, pop,
yeah,
or, you know, the extreme, yeah, genres really. It wouldn't be known as a country venue. I don't know many country singers that would have sang it. We did that, and then we went from that to doing the Bord Gáis Theatre, which was like, I don't know, 2,300 seats, and we played that and sold that out. And then we I was speaking to Peter Aiken, and he was like, we tried the Three Arena, and I was like, what, like half capacity or something? He was like, well, we'll stick it on a half, and if it sells out, we'll take the whole thing, you know? And I was like, okay. But at this stage, Wagon Wheel had come and gone, like 3 or 4 years past, so... it was the whole gig and momentum thing that Wagon Wheel obviously helped me get to there. But, and I was still, and I still am always looking for songs and you know, new ways of played on radio and TV and so forth. But it was kind of the gigging thing that just took over, and the fans kept buying tickets and more people started coming. And it was the live show that was keeping me afloat and keeping the band going and keeping everything moving.
Sure.
You know, which is the same with Celtic as well. You know, it's
live, you know, it is.
Keep
the live shows is where it's at. Yeah. Absolutely. And I love that on the topic of live shows, when you talk about, you know, the gigs that didn't go your way as well when you were starting out, that it wasn't just a case of you rolled into the big theatre straight away and sold them out. That
it's a few years of gigs with hardly anyone there, and do you know what, they're the gigs that make you as well, you know. I think
I was just about to say
the bigger ones, that whenever you do get a chance to walk out and there's a full stadium or whatever it is, you know, yeah you just think, oh geez, this is I'm very grateful.
Yeah, so you're standing on the wings of the Three Arena about to walk out on stage. What is that feeling like? Did you have time to, like, did you feel at the time, this is the big moment? Like, if you're releasing the album next week, obviously the best of the first 10 years. When you're looking back at those 10 years, could you pinpoint that moment as being the really, really special highlight of the 10 years?
That would be up there with one of the top moments for sure. We were filming it as well that night. We filmed the whole thing, and that was even...
I've seen the footage of it. I mean, it looks unbelievable.
So I was like, if I fall over coming in singing my first song, if down the stairs backwards or something, like, I was like, oh, geez. And it's filmed. So there was a lot of...
You see, that's the kind of stuff I love. You know, we're asked a lot, what's going through your head at that moment, or you know, and it's those kind of things. It's like, there's a camera in your face, I hope they can't see my hand shaking or my leg shaking or anything. But here is the opening number from that very night.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome on stage the one and only Nathan Carter.
Good evening. Laughing and drinking and having a party. Two doors down, and I don't wear the time around. Cause here I am, crying my heart out, feeling sorry. Having a party just two doors down. I think I'll dry these useless tears and get myself together. I think I wanna down the hall and have a look around. Cause I can stay inside this lonely room and cry forever. I think it'd really rather join them. Two doors down, yeah, two doors down. Laughing and drinking and having a party. Two doors down, tonight I don't wear the time around. Cause here I am, ram my heart out feeling sorry. Having a party just two doors down. Well, I
So Nathan, I'd also like to ask about the Nathan Carter TV show. How did that come about and what was that like?
I actually forgot about that. That was something that was probably one of the highlights as well, to be honest, that I totally forgot about it. We did two series of it and never really thought I'd have a TV show on RTE. I mean, obviously I thought I might appear on a couple, but to be hosting one was a totally different ballgame. So the first one, I remember the first episode was we had Mary Black and we had Brian Kennedy and a few others, John Sheehan playing fiddle from the Dubliners. And I had to do all these and I was like, oh, God. And I used to get an interview, but I'm not used to interviewing people. So I had to work at this. It took me a while to settle down and again, not be shaking, trying to hold the mic and just.
Of course, yeah. I know, but.
Singing like performance all day long, sing whatever you want to sing the alphabet. But when it comes to it, and by the way, doing a fantastic job. I could have done with it from you maybe before I.
Thanks, Nate. No, I thought, I mean, on a totally different level and scale to what you're talking about on RTE, but I totally get it because, I mean, I've spent the last few weeks panicking before interviews thinking, I've never thought about actually asking the questions. It's always been the one trying to muster up some answer.
But I find that this way of being is very normal for people. It's more of an informal chat, you know, and I think this is the way of the future, to be honest, is the like of these podcasts. Is it's great for people. But to go back to the TV show, I mean, that was it was a great door opener again to get it was prime time Sunday night, you know, it was kind of
course
half 8-9 o'clock at night having a show on TV, and some of the people we worked with was just incredible. My own band backed them all, which was incredible for them as well, like to be standing behind Paul Carrick and Billy Ocean and the lads from Westlife, Shane and Mark, all them, and they backed all them lads. It was great for them, for their CV as well, do you know what I mean, to be saying they back all these incredible international acts. And
anyone who's anyone in the country, really, you know,
I mean, it was anybody that RT could get in town at that time, whoever was promoting a new album. Obviously a lot of the acts wants to do the late, and if they'd done that they wouldn't do any other shows, but some of them said, you know, if we've done the late already, we'll do it, sure, why not. We were get some of the acts we really were. And there was a lot of Irish homegrown acts that were on it that, you know, people that I'd really admired since I was a kid growing up, Finbar Fury and Johnny McAvoy and Sharon Shannon. And there was just so many, you know, of my heroes, my family's heroes that we would have listened to as kids. So to get to work with them was a real honour and a treat.
No, but fair play to you, Nathan. It's honestly, it's been... it's been a pleasure from the outside looking in, you know, just seeing this career that you know, from going from the guy who sings Wagon Wheel on the radio to just being, you know, the name in the country. Like it really is unbelievable. You know, I remember, I don't know if this is a synopsis that you'd like or anything, but I remember there was, we were working with, I forget the name of the magazine now, but it was one of the magazines back home, and they were talking about you, you know, and the success you were having, and they were saying, you know, it's kind of like the country scene has been looking for, you know, another Daniel O'Donnell for a long, long time, and you come in kind of being that, but then also then Westlife looked like from the pop scene, like they took a break, and it's as if you filled the void of both in the country. Really, it became this, you know, this pop icon and a country icon, and merged it together. It's amazing.
I don't know about that, but you know, I've been compared a lot to Daniel. I suppose it's the genre, you know, and
sure.
But I always take it as a compliment anyway. I mean, Daniel's had amazing success through the years, and he's actually been very good. Mentor really to me and a lot of the other singers in Ireland, really, of my age group. I know he's rang and speak to a lot of them, you know, just to give words of advice or encouragement, and he's always there if you need if you have a few questions to ask, you know. So he's been a very good ambassador, really, for
brilliant
longevity, and just someone in the business who's been there and done it, you know, in America, in UK. That's success everywhere, you know. So a lot of course.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Nathan, thank you so much for taking the time out. Before we start wrapping up, I mean, again, to you know, talk about the album, the best of the first 10 years, which is going to be, for anyone listening to this podcast, they can also get their hands on it because it's out November 12th. When you're looking back at the 10 years, is there anything that, you know, so many highlights that you've spoken about, you know, and playing Three Arena, having your own show and the going from strength to strength with the touring and the gigging. Is there anything that you felt looking back that a box you haven't ticked that you'd like to, maybe if you're doing the best of the first 20 years in 10 years time that you're hoping that might pop up?
There's a couple of things I'd love to do. I mean, I've only dipped my toe into going over to America and doing a few bits over there. We did a show in New York the start of this year, sold it out. It was only a small little venue called the Music Rooms, but 300 people in the sold out show. And that's something that I'm going to try and do a bit more of up ahead, and following the paths of, you know, the likes of Celtic Thunder and Celtic Women and all them fantastic shows that just, you know, seem to do so well over there. So that's an aim, is to do a bit more work in America, and who knows, maybe come across another write or come across another song that can be a bit of a hit.
Yeah.
Be known in other places as well. So, but to be
of course,
to be gigging, doesn't matter whether I'm playing to 20 or 20,000, it doesn't matter. I just, after this year, I'll be glad to play anyway. And just to,
I can imagine, yeah. And the final question, Nathan, that is if you were to look back, you know, what we're asking each of our guests is if you could talk to a 13, 14 year old Nathan Carter who's kind of sitting there in Liverpool dreaming about being a singer and a musician, is there any advice that you'd give to them?
Well, apart from the usuals, you know, keep working hard and follow your dream, and don't let anybody stand in your way, and don't pay attention to social media. It's not all. Yeah,
brilliant. Well, listen, on that note, Nathan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on board. Best of luck with the album, and thanks a million for taking the time out to join the Create podcast.
Absolute pleasure. Have a great day. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
We want to say a massive, massive thank you to Nathan Carter for joining us today on this episode of the Create podcast, and I really hope that you all enjoy the chat. If you do, please remember to subscribe to Broad Talent on any of the podcasting platforms to receive a notification whenever our next episode goes live, which is every Thursday between now and Christmas. If you could share the episode on your social media channels as well, that would be really helpful for us to try and get the word out there. Join us next Thursday the 19th as we chat with comedian and actor Josie Long. But for now, we're going to leave you with a song from Nathan Carter's album, The Best of the First 10 Years, which is now on sale. Here is Wings to Fly. Thanks, folks.
I dreamed a dream that we both shared. Soon I could see how much you cared. Your faith in me, it never died. You gave me wings, the wings to fly. Now you are an angel flying high. You left us here on earth alone to cry. Memories of you will never die. For you gave me wings, the wings to fly. Always there to lend a hand. You watched me grow from boy to man. But then I heard the sad, sad news. So hard to take, so hard to lose. Now you are an angel flying high. You left us here on earth alone to cry. Memories of you will never die. For you gave me wings, the wings. Picked up the phone again to see your smile. Just to hear your voice, I hit that die. and I'll come back to you. If those few words could just come true. 'Cause now you are an angel flying high. You left us here on earth alone to cry. But memories of you will never die. For you gave me wings to fly. Now you are an angel flying high. You left us here on earth alone to cry. But memories of you will never die. For you gave me wings, the wings to fly, the wings to fly, the wings to fly.